Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
And I like this stuff. You know, my uncle, he's a great person. He was at MIT. He taught at MIT for, I think, like a record number of years. He was a great super genius, Dr. John Trump. I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it. Every one of these doctors said, how do you know so much about this? Maybe I have a natural ability. Maybe I should have done that instead of running for president. But you know what? What they've done is very incredible. I understand that whole world. I love that world. I really do. I love that world. And they should be given tremendous credit. And the whole...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit, Season 2, Episode 10, for Wednesday, March 11th. I'm your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel. Great to be here.
Oh, Frank, it's great to hear your voice, as always. Before we get busy, because I know we're going to be a little bit pressed for time, so we kind of want to jump into this pretty quick. Just real quick, how's it going? I haven't talked to you in at least a week.
Well, we missed last week, and I'm glad to hear your voice, because we had, you know, listen, all of us have to make sure we take care of ourselves, and you had to take care of yourself last week with a visit to make sure you get your checkup and everything else, and we all need to make sure we get our checkups here and there. So glad to hear you're doing well now.
Yeah, whenever we get off air sometime, I got to tell you a story. Two stories about that day. You will laugh hysterically.
I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to hear them. But thank you for asking how I'm doing. I'm doing really well. I'm busy with work. Things are heating up in my world in terms of casework, and that's a good thing. Sometimes it's just you plant the seeds, and you wait and wait and wait, and you know, and then eventually the seeds start to sprout out of the ground, and that's where we are right now. So, so thanks for asking. Everything's going good.
Good. You know, today's one of those days where you think by now we'd be used to it. We've been doing this for, you know, going on 2 years now, and it seems like everything we plan in the morning, by the time we actually get on and start talking about things, you know, four other things have happened. But a little earlier today, we were the two of us and a couple of our really good friends, we were all on a Discord channel together, and we're chatting back and forth about various things, and one of the things that popped up on my news feed was the World Health Organization has just declared the coronavirus as a pandemic, which I think we all kind of knew was coming. But I'll be honest with you, Frank, I think that was a little quicker than I thought it was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe we're conditioned in a way to not, you know, panic, quote unquote. And, you know, this is a funny thing to talk about panic and talk about preparedness. And I think that's one of the angles I wanted to talk about when we, you know, just within the last couple hours, you and I decided we need to talk about this because it's huge news. Have we lived through another declaration of a pandemic? Nothing really comes to mind. It's possible, but you know, this is something that is so huge and newsworthy. Today's, just in case people listen to this podcast, you know, months from now, a year from now, later today, whatever they do, it's March 11th, and it's before 4 p.m. You know, we're just before 4 p.m., just so you know how timely this is. You know, this was declared within the last few hours by the WHO, COVID-19 to be a pandemic. And I think this is one of the angles that I'd like to kind of pursue is, earlier in the week, one of the great creative minds of our time, who, whether I personally like him or don't like him, I acknowledge he's got a creative mind and is pushing the envelope to more creativity. And for that, I appreciate him. But there's other things I don't appreciate about the guy. Elon Musk made a tweet earlier in the week that said, all the panic over COVID-19 is dumb. And, you know, a blanket statement like that by somebody who's an influencer, I took exception to it personally, because I think it sends things the other way, because there's already a portion of our country, there's already an agenda within this country, and not just this country, but other governments had tried to poo-poo this, had tried to downplay this, had tried to say, you know, things like this is a hoax, And this is no worse than the common cold. You know, Rush Limbaugh said that at one time. I think Trump himself said, you know, the flu kills more people than COVID. And, you know, while that may, that particular statement may be factually true at this point in time, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be preparing. And that's what I'm trying to get at here, is preparing for what is coming. And to mistake the anticipation of preparing for something like this with panic is, I think, a very short-sighted thing to say and a short-sighted way to look at it. Because in his eyes, what may be taking the approach of preparing for it, for like you and I, who don't have billions of dollars or even millions of dollars that I know of, you know, we have to prepare in a different way than maybe Elon Musk prepares for this. And the general public has to prepare in a different way than Elon Musk prepares for this. He may see that as panic. You know, if you go out and buy enough groceries to last you 2 weeks or a month, he might think that's panicking. We might think that's preparing. So I don't know, and nobody knows, quite frankly, because it's quote unquote a novel virus. The human race has not faced this virus and built up an immunity to it, or seen how it will mutate and what it will do to the human race, because it's brand new. So for him to make a statement like that, I would say it's irresponsible. Does he have a responsibility to the public? Not an elected official responsibility, but he's a CEO of a large company. Some of the money, the public money, goes to his company through various grants and means. People put their money into his company through investments. He has a responsibility to his board, and the board has a responsibility to the investing public. So there is some responsibility, and he has a powerful voice and platform. So I think it was very irresponsible for him to make such a statement.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the best thing you can do is just not say anything at all. You know? Yeah. I agree with, well, let's say I agree with the premise, or I agree with the spirit of it, where, you know, yeah, if you take the same precautions that you would take around, you know, flu season, around people that you know that have the flu, you should be pretty safe. And you know, maybe you want to be a little bit more attentive to doing these things, washing your hands, you know, things like that. While we're talking, I'm watching the Champions League game, Liverpool and hosting Atletico Madrid, and you know, you see these guys who before the match they don't shake hands now, right? Because they can't shake hands. But yet, after the match, they'll be hugging each other like crazy. Yeah. So, so you know, there's a little bit of I guess it would be stupidity in that case, right? But going back to your point, yeah, you have a responsibility because you are the CEO of a very large organization, a company, and let's face it, everybody knows who he is. Everybody recognizes his name. And so, if you're going to say something, either say something positive or don't say anything at all. You know, it's that simple. And I can understand people's panic. And I can understand people not knowing anything, right? And we talked about people who aren't getting all the correct information, or all of the information, which is the other side of the coin. Those have to be the Fox Entertainment viewers, right? And then the other side of that coin is people who are getting good information, or maybe the best information available at the time, but they're getting it so often and in such a emotional way, you know, because they're not watching Fox, they're watching CNN or maybe MSNBC, where it's just constantly pounded into you about this virus that's coming, it's going to kill everybody on the planet, or at least eventually that's what you think because you hear it so much. But you don't have anybody else who's capable of giving you credible information, right? Our government can't give us credible information. Well, they could, they're just refusing to. So you're stuck with the hype train, or the Rush Limbaugh's, oh, it's just a cold, right? You know, you have one or the other. You don't have a steady platform to sit there and say, look, this is what we're dealing with. This is what we got. Just go and going back to what you were saying earlier about pandemics, the last one was in 2009. I Googled it. H1N1 was the last pandemic we had. Who was the president in 2009?
Geez, let's see. That would have been Barack Obama.
There you go. No drama Obama, right?
Right.
So the idea that you have people in positions where their personality and their demeanor and their decor mean a whole lot. Right. And whenever you have the head of the CDC standing behind a podium telling the world, we have 70,000 kits, right? We have 70,000 test kits. And not 5 seconds later, right beside him, you have a president that says, anybody who wants one can get one. And that's right. Literally what happened, right? That literally happened in that amount of time in 7 seconds, right? As soon as the head of the CDC got done making that statement, Trump busted in with, anybody who wants one can get one. So you don't have credible information. So what happens whenever you don't have credible information? You have more widespread panic. You have people who are panicking anyhow. Now you don't have a baseline. You don't have a good common source or a good reliable source. So more people are going to panic because they don't know what the hell's going on.
That's right, because we let our imaginations fill in those gaps.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I hate to say it, but and you know you can correct me, which I'm hoping you do. What choice do people have? Right, which
none.
None. I mean,
none. You come to your own conclusions. You're left with the you know, trying to draw upon life experiences, which is difficult to compare because we don't have much to compare it to. You right. Draw upon as many facts as you can get from different sources. So that's the choices we have. Yeah.
And we sit here, and you know, I mentioned the Champions League match earlier, especially for you and me, Frank, and you know, like our kids, we have a huge passion for soccer, right? And you're looking at Serie A, which is the Italian league, and both of us of Italian descent, and we can't watch any Serie A matches, you know, this week because Serie A hasn't been canceled yet, but it's damn near close.
Yeah,
you know, we're going to probably see the same thing happen pretty close to England. Spain already canceled for 2 weeks, so like my beloved Barcelona, I can't watch. I guess I just have to put you know pictures of Messi up on my phone and just you know do that.
As if you don't already have those.
I'm neither going to confirm nor deny that statement. Bundesliga, right? For the first time possibly ever. Bundesliga kept matches going through the Spanish flu, through World War I, through World War II. If you look at Bayern Munich's crest during the late 30s, early 40s, it's actually, there's a swastika on. They never stopped playing soccer in Germany. Well, guess what? They're about to. So that's how bad this is. And if you and I weren't the type of people who have been through a lot, have seen a lot, and are pretty, our minds are pretty rational. We definitely have rational thought patterns. It's very easy to panic. It's very, very easy to. Our passions are being put aside or put on hold. Our some of our news sources are pounding this into us. I can see how people get panicky. I really can.
I agree, and you know these are new occurrences, and as you pointed out very, very adeptly. This is so new to us, you know, that we've never seen these kind of things occur before, meaning cancellations or postponements of large sporting events like this, even in periods of such turbulence in our history, in the world history. You know, let's throw out another one. Church services being canceled. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just unprecedented. You know, it's just unbelievable. So I think we, you know, we definitely have things that are hitting us in the face that, you know, are a shock to they're a shock to what our norms are. They're a shock to our, the life that we've experienced and what we know. And as human beings, we don't like such sudden changes. So they really, it really, really messes with us. And, you know, I think we're stuck between this idea of, well, how do we best go on with functioning in our lives, but yet prepare for the potential disruption to these everyday lives that we have. And that's where I think that, you know, the common sense approach to this is important. And, you know, my common sense approach works for me because it's my common sense approach. Your common sense approach works for you. And that's, you know, that's what people have to look at and sit down with their family members, their friends, their loved ones, and say, what is it that, you know, just for example, and I don't want to do this as, you know, a requirement, but maybe more as a public service to say, look, what do you have in your refrigerator on a week-to-week basis? What do you have in your pantry, in your kitchen on a week-to-week basis? What do you have on your dinner table on a week-to-week basis? What do you have in your household that you use to clean your, you know, your bathroom and to wash your clothes with? Okay, take note of that. Do you have enough there to do that for the rest of this month? All of those things. Do you have enough there to do that for a two-week period if you couldn't go outside your house for a two-week period? If you don't, is it stuff that you absolutely need? Well, then if it is, then probably should go get it. Probably should go get it in enough supply that it'll last you for at least 2 weeks. Because I will say this, most of the country, and this isn't a badge of honor necessarily, I kind of wear it as such, but I wouldn't say it is. But you know, most of the country hasn't experienced a real true lockdown on their liberties or their freedom as a collective member of society, not in the sense of jail. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you live in a community or you live in a city or a state or a county that has been, some of your liberty has been collectively deprived because of circumstances outside of your control. And I have recently, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit. Back in 2015, I experienced living in a city that was on lockdown, that had 9 o'clock curfews, that you could not go outside of your house after 9 p.m. You would get stopped by police forces with automatic weapons, with riot gear on. I left my workplace in the middle of the afternoon and wanted to ride my bicycle down the normal street that I would ride it down to go to Little Italy in Baltimore to go get some lunch. And I was stopped by police in riot gear, a line of them. And I was like, hey, I'm just riding over there. You know, I'm just getting over to that next street so that I can get to my lunch. And they're like, no, you have to go around. And for a moment I became, you know, enraged inside of myself and I'm trying to contain it. And I was like, why? And they're like, because we said so. And this is not your street anymore, essentially, is what they told me.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, you know, and I got the signal and I was like, you know, there's a better time to make these kind of arguments than right here. So I'll turn my bike around and I'll go a couple streets over and just take a different route. But the point is, when things like this happen, things change very suddenly. You don't have the same freedoms, liberties, and control of your life that you think you do. So it is best to prepare, not panic, but prepare. So do take note of what you appreciate and like in your house and make sure you have enough supply of it. You don't have to have a year supply, 6 month supply, 3 month supply, 2 weeks to a month. That's it.
Right. And what's the worst that happens? Well, you don't have to go grocery shopping for a while.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, preparing for things like this never really has a downside to it. Right. If you're just prudent or as you perfectly said, you know, just use a little bit of common sense, folks, just a little bit. Stock up on things you need stocked up on. Pretty good rule of thumb is if you're gonna get the groceries for 2 weeks, you don't need 2 weeks of potato chips. But you know, Frank, I was really looking forward for a segue. I was really looking for a segue, and I can't find it. But last night we had the what a lot of folks are calling Super Tuesday 2, if I'm reading that right. There was what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Six states up for grabs. Last night. And Biden won 4 of them. I wanna say Michigan, Mississippi, What were the others, Frank? Coming up? Why do I blank? Why do I always blank whenever I'm on there? Mississippi, Michigan. I am professional. Let me tell you.
Hang on. While we're looking for those, you're saying Biden won four of the six, and okay. we'll detail which one of those four they were. But what do you think this signals? I kind of know from our Discord channel, but what do you think this signals for the Democratic primary race?
Well, you know, it's interesting that we bring it up. I'm really between two minds about this. I think two things happen, because don't forget, Biden's now winning states where he's not even campaigning in, or because simply he didn't have any money, right? It wasn't right. like he was pulling a Hillary Clinton and just decided not to go to Michigan. He literally couldn't, because there was no money.
His campaign coffers were so low, which is something that we talked about on our Discord channel, like two, maybe 10, 12, 15 days ago, that he was running out of money. And yeah, look where we are now. It's interesting.
So it was Biden won Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, and Missouri.
And the states that were up for grabs were, what was it, Washington State? Or yeah, Washington State,
Washington.
Idaho. Was it one of the Dakotas? Both Dakotas?
South Dakota,
and Missouri, Mississippi, Michigan, right?
Right. And Biden took Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, and Missouri. Bernie won Michigan and Idaho last time around, and Joe beat him in these ones, and you know, this time around. Here's first of all, I listen to a lot of people who are supposed experts coming up with all kinds of reasons why Joe won or is winning. And I don't fully believe all of them, but I'm not fully discrediting all of them either. I think they're just trying to look at an anomaly from different view. And, you know, maybe some of the things just aren't lining up in my mind, and other things seem to click a little bit better. But I really wonder how much of those wins that Bernie picked up last time, especially the Michigan win, was simply anti-Hillary votes. You know, that was my first question. You know, how much of the votes that he received in 2016 were just because people didn't like Hillary? And let's be honest, Hillary wasn't a good candidate. She's not a very likable person. I thought she was the best qualified. It turns out, I don't think there's too many people that can disagree with me now. But she wasn't a likable candidate. She wasn't a somebody who made you want to rally around, right?
Right.
So, you know, that was a pretty big flaw. The other question that is coming to my mind is, I'm wondering how many people really are just tired of the bashing back and forth, right? A lot of Bernie's tactics are very reminiscent to Trump's tactics. Now, I'm not saying that he goes into the gutter as bad as Trump does. He's calling people names and doing his own, you know, don't think that's what I'm doing. But I think whenever you're talking about how Bernie is running his campaign and the things that he's doing and some of the rhetoric that he's spewing is very reminiscent of Trump's. And I'm wondering how many people are just tired of that and are looking for somebody who's a more, I don't want to say gentlemanly, because that's a slate on Sanders that isn't fair. Who's a uniter, who's somebody who wants to pull people together instead of saying, you know, my way is the way it has to be. And that's why my personal opinion is why Joe's getting a lot more of the everything but black vote. Let's put it that way. Okay. I think he's getting the black vote simply because I think African-Americans sort of relate to him more. And, you know, there's the Obama factors in there too, I think. What do you think?
I agree with you. I'll just stick on that last thing you said, but I do want to address almost everything you said, but I just want to start off with the last thing you said. I find it very interesting that one of my housemates here is 29 years old. He's African-American black man who campaigned, canvassed, worked for Bernie in 2016. Very energized, still would consider him to be a Bernie supporter. He is from Southern Virginia and went to school in Pennsylvania. So I'm trying to give you as many demographics as you can get about this person. Mm-hmm. But he's passionately supporting Bernie because he believes that Bernie is a true change agent, and that he represents something that would provide a different opportunity for people who are marginalized and people who have been at the margins of society and excluded from power base for so long. So he believes that, and he believes that in his heart. So it's a little different than, I think, the older generation who see Biden as walking, you know, hand in hand with our first black president and serving alongside of the first black president, and looking at him as kind of an old guard, potentially friend of people of color. And it's an interesting divide. And I think it's one that I don't have the real answer to. I'm just making observations from anecdotes. You know, this isn't like actual data study. It's just like, what have I observed personally in life? So it's interesting. So I just throw that out there. And then as far as the big picture stuff, I couldn't agree with you more on the basis of, you know, there are people who see the potential to unite a common cause around somebody who has electability that can maybe quiet down all the nastiness, but yet still be a fighter. Because let's face it, I think both Bernie and Biden have shown the propensity to have a firebrand and be able to fight. Biden, look, I don't think it's a bad thing that he stepped into that auto worker's face the other day and said, "You're full of shit." Because quite frankly, especially on the gun issue, there are a lot of people who have changed their sentiment on that. You know, I'm in contact with a lot of Trump supporters who have told me directly that they have young kids in schools and they are all for common sense gun reform. So that's an interesting nuance that runs through just humanity, in the sense of, like, I don't want to see my kids get gunned down in school. I don't care who I support politically. I don't want to see my kids get gunned down in school. So when Biden stepped into the face of that steel worker or that auto worker in Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, the other day and said, "You're full of shit," he showed a little bit of fire. Mm-hmm. He showed a little bit of willingness to fight, but yet he's somebody who has been able to unite, you know, across different party lines, across different generations, at least historically. Now we're living in a different time, but I agree with you that that's something that is a factor as we're seeing it evolve in this Democratic primary.
Yeah. And you know, whenever we were talking about things, I really, you know, to me, you know, the reason I'm an engineer in a company and out on the shop floor a lot, as opposed to working in a university where I'm telling people how to calculate something, is because whenever I'm telling people how to calculate something, that is almost a theoretical thing, where whenever I'm working, I'm doing it hands-on. I'm seeing the reality of it. And that's why a lot of the discourse we were having on Discord, I'm sorry, I had to get that in, was because, look, I understand the passion and I understand the ideals. You know, I've said so many times, no one can look at what Bernie is proposing or what he would like to have happen and disagree with, right? I would love for my son to go to school for free, right? You would love for your kids to be able to go to college for free. I mean, we paid for 12 years of it anyhow before, right? They get 12 years free right off the bat. Why do they have to start paying for the other four? I get that. I'm on board with that. I love it. Universal health, you know, Medicare for all. Love it. Love the idea. I just look at it like being hands-on. It's not going to happen. We may get there, but it's going to take 20, 30, 40 years. We're not going to do it before. It's just not right. possible. So,
right.
you know, my feeling is, at the end of the day, at worst case, I'm looking at worst case, Frank. Worst case, Trump gets beat. That's the worst case scenario that I'm willing to accept. Best case scenario is Trump and Mitch McConnell get beat. And whenever you have an independent, he doesn't care about Don Ticket, man. He doesn't care. He wants the White House. He wants what he's fighting for. He doesn't care about his party. That's why, by definition, he's an independent. I'm an independent. I know that. I don't care about your party.
Right.
Party doesn't mean anything to me. I don't pick somebody simply because of the party. I pick somebody right. if I agree with them. Right. We have Joe Biden, who's a lifelong Democrat, and he's going to push the Democratic ideals, and he's going to push for down ballot races, and he's going to do all of these things that an independent just isn't going to do. So
no, you're right. And you know, my best case scenario, I'll go one step further than your best case scenario. I agree with the first two parts of your best case scenario. Trump gets beat, McConnell gets beat. But, and this may be a difference in a Democrat and an independent, or it may just be a difference in voicing it this way. We also see a flip in the Senate control from Republican control to Democrat control.
We have, which, that's what I meant.
Oh, I just was taking it as if you meant just Mitch McConnell himself gets beat.
Well, yeah, well, that would be, oh my God, that's, you know, that's God smiling on our country. No, I meant I meant the Democrats taking the Senate. I'm
gotcha,
sorry.
Gotcha, I no. I can see that interpretation. Sorry, I didn't take it.
You know, so that's, you know, that's the, and again, you know, I'm the independent saying I want the Democrats taking the Senate.
Right. Right.
You know.
Well, and I think there's I think there's a good chance of that happening. You know, the Republicans have focused on so many silly things, and it's one of those things that, you know, has always been a boondoggle for the Democratic Party, is like, where is your focus? Where is your, you know, where is your party platform? What is the focus of what you want to do? And you know, the GOP and the Republicans have always rallied around a couple very big hot button issues. You know, there's the abortion issue and there's the gun rights issue. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now they're kind of lost because they've got, you know, what is their platform these days? Is it, you know, Trumpism? Is it the economy? Is it healthcare? Is it preserving, you know, is it preserving the ability to, you know, keep your healthcare coverage? Is it preserving entitlements, making sure that they're not seen as the party that's going to cut into people's entitlements? Because they do realize that Americans are concerned about that now. And so the things that have traditionally been in the Democrat, under the Democrat tent, are going to play a lot better. So we do have a much bigger opportunity for the Senate to shift. Plus the fact that now they've got this big, huge albatross around their neck, the GOP, which is Trump. Because let's face it, he is being exposed. He's being completely exposed as a fragile dictator who has no leadership skills, who has no plan, no foresight, who's a reality TV huckster, who is not suited for the office of presidency. And they've kept him in this position, propped him up, and now they'll have to answer for it. We said, like, I don't know, you know, a couple months ago that the Senate is on trial. And guess what? The verdict for the Senate is due about November of 2020, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, you have a guy who's basically trying to bullshit a virus, right? He's trying to bullshit and bully a virus. And yeah, that just does not work. It just simply does not work. It's going to be interesting, Frank. And his behavior is going to get far worse before it gets better. It really is.
It is, because he's losing his shit. The stock market's going down. The economy is starting to tell a tale that we've been talking about for a while now. There's been all this cheap money that's propped it up. And the, at some point, the debt comes due. My biggest fear in all of this has been that, and I don't think my biggest fear will be realized, thankfully. My biggest fear was always that Trump would do his damage and that it wouldn't be felt until years later when a Democrat finally won, you know, things back again, and it would get blamed on the Democrat because all those bills would become due then.
Yeah.
The incredible thing is the bills are coming due now during Trump's presidency.
Yeah, far earlier than I think anybody expected. I agree with you. I that was not my biggest fear, but it was definitely a fear for me too.
Yep.
Hopefully the bill comes due real quick, right? Because before November, because we're going to pay for it anyhow. We might as well get something out of it.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's talk real quick before we get off, because we've changed topics a couple times, but I do want to come back to the issue of the, I asked you what you thought it meant for the Democratic primary. You know, I will speak based on some knowledge that you and I have spoken about earlier in the Discord channel, that there is a belief among some folks in our friend zone that based upon the 4 out of 6 wins that Biden took last night and the way it's happened, let's put this in context. It's not just that he won states. It's that he won states that he didn't have a campaign presence in, like you pointed out earlier in this conversation. It's that he had a magical reversal of fortune, in a sense, from, you know, 10 days ago to now. That as one of our friends called it, the South Carolina moment, you know, and she said there's no South Carolina moment in the future for Bernie that's visible. So there's a thought that maybe now is a time to have, you know, Bernie self-reflect and think what's best for the country and maybe drop out now. And so my thought on that is maybe a little different in that I don't think he should. And I'm not saying he should stay until the bitter, bitter end. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is I think it's good for the democratic process, not the Democratic Party. It's good for the democratic process to have this play out a little longer. It's good for the kind of idea of sharpening steel against steel to make sure that, you know, whoever wins this thing is prepared and ready to fight. Look, you know, when I'm coaching a team and their first game is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, playing against a team that played an 11 o'clock game and already got their froth going, and then they play us at 1 o'clock, boy, it's tough to beat those teams. you know, but when we're the team that played one game at 11 and then we come out at 1, it seems like we're, and the other team hasn't played yet, it seems like we're ready to go, and those other teams are still trying to feel their way through the early part of the game. So I like, you know, it's like teams that go into the playoffs with a bye, right? The other teams that fought their way in, they seem to play better. I like having to fight till the end a little bit, maybe not to the bitter end, but till the end. Let's not sap all the money out of, you know, one of these two guys' coffers. But at the same time, I think the momentum will get behind one of the two. The money will start to flow into one of the two. It'll strengthen one of the two. And I think the process does that as opposed to a coasting type thing. I don't think there's any altruism or lack of altruism on either of their parts if they don't drop out, you know, if there's a signal to do so in the next, let me put it out this way. I could go as far as the end of May. I would tell you that in my belief system, going back to the days of Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, you know, Bush, and even before that, you know, that time frame in my mind and shortly after that, you didn't see, you know, George Bush, the father, concede to Ronald Reagan until just before the convention. And then they became best friends and running mates, you know, and then there was like, let's adopt the voodoo economics that I used to talk about as voodoo economics as part of my platform. And, you know, in the Democratic Party, you know, we had Al Gore and Clinton who bashed, you know, one another to some extent and then became running mates. And there was a platform to adopt other people's ideas once you got to the Democratic Convention. So, you know, under certain circumstances, I would say it should go further. But in today's world, I could say I could stop myself from saying, let's go all the way to the convention and say, let's fight till late spring. And then let's turn the page. Let's turn the page at that point.
And my timeline ideally is exactly the same as yours, right? Is April, May would be ideal for Bernie to get out. My problem is Bernie has shown that he's not going to do that. So we already have a history here. We already have a track record. He's already shown he has no interest in. Okay, that was number one for me. The other thing, and I'll tell you one better, because this made me think a whole lot about his character. If he's willing to push all the way to the bitter end, like he did with Hillary, I still want to know why he ran as a Democrat. He could have ran as an independent and pushed all the way to November. Never had to worry about delegates, never had to worry about a broker convention, never had to worry about anything. He would have got just as much money because all of his money's coming from small donations to his credit. So there was no viable reason for him to run as a Democrat. I understand why the Democratic Party wanted him to. That way he would be out before November if he wasn't the candidate. And it would help their, would help the person who's an actual Democrat. But if you're him, if you're the independent, you have no reason to run in the Democratic primary. You could run all by yourself.
You've made this point before, and it's a tremendous point that sometimes it takes different events to turn the light bulb completely on. And I'm not speaking, I'm not speaking about the public. I'm speaking about myself. I've heard that from you before, and I've taken it into my mind, and I've taken it into my thought process, and I've thought about it in so many different ways. But today, when you say it, it hits in a different way. You know what I mean? Sometimes when somebody says something and it hits in a different way, and it's like, absolutely. You know, there is, if you're going to talk about the democratic small d, democratic process, and say what is flawed about the democratic process or what is good about the democratic process, and that's what you want to put your investment into. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about time, effort, and money. Then if your candidate is this guy and he's an independent, like you said, then let him run as an independent. He doesn't have to fight for the Democratic nomination. If he's got that base of support, then he can be the big eye independent on the ticket come November. So it's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting proposition. And I wonder why the mainstream media has not presented that question as you've just kind of formulated with that clarity. And why haven't they presented that to Bernie in a setting that would allow for him to truly expand upon that and to truly follow up on it, not just in a soundbite way? Because I'd love to hear the response, because I can substitute my own imagination for why he and the Democratic Party would want to stay married in some ways. But I'd still like to hear from him. What's the motivation?
Right. And so then after you ask, why is he doing this? The next question you ask, I mean, you're the attorney. You tell me if I'm wrong. The next question you ask is why isn't he doing it?
Right.
If he could do, he would actually be better off.
But let me pose it back to you. Wouldn't it truly be a help to Trump if he was the big eye independent on the ticket come November? Because wouldn't he then, in fact, truly hurt Biden in that situation?
Well, then here's, and it's very possible. It's very possible, right? And maybe it is, maybe, but from his point of view, he's either going to get these backers or he's not. It seems to me that if he wants this movement, and he basically the Democratic Party, the entire party over the last Super Tuesdays has shown him that we want the more centrist guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to swing them. You're not going to swing these people. So whenever our choice comes down to it, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
Listen, this is why this thing is unscripted. This is why we're sitting here talking.
Maybe you're right.
As a podcast, and it's a fantastic format, and I think it's one of the reasons why people love to listen to these kind of things.
Yeah, maybe you're right. However, if my goal is to get people on board, I'm not so sure I'm playing by your rules. You know, I'm going to play by my rules.
But yeah,
you know, I don't know, Frank. You made me think about something just by simply answering, and I hate it when you do that.
Listen, it's gone both ways. It's gone both ways during this podcast, and throughout the day, it's never a dull moment in our Discord, and I hope that it's never a dull moment on our podcast. If it is, then we need to find ways to keep making it lively. So, listen, I really appreciate this format. I appreciate you doing everything you do to keep us moving forward on this thing. So, and I appreciate you being willing to be flexible today to make this a little shorter than we normally do.
Frank, anything for you, man. Anything for you. Besides, it was you. It was soccer. It was like, oh, come on. How can I say no? anything you want to say before we put this thing to bed?
I think I've said everything. Again, thank you. Thank you to the listeners. And I look forward to joining again next week.
Thank you. Like I always say, to everybody listening, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with, it truly does. You folks have no idea how really honored. So Frank, until next week, right? Same bad time, same bad channel. If folks don't get that, they're far too young to be listening to this podcast. And to everybody else listening, again, thank you, goodbye, and God bless.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Sh**.